Gary Cantrell Podcast. Another week, me flying solo. And this time I'm back with an actual purpose, a topic. One that I've been getting a lot of requests for. I believe it was the 25 Things About Me episode. Somewhere in there, I brought up my father. And I had just said some kind of throwaway comment like, oh, well, that's a whole story. That's a whole podcast. You guys don't want to know about that. Something to that effect. And what I'm learning now is when you say stuff like that, it's like people know, you know, that they want to know. They do want to know. So I had a couple of weeks where I had some guests, so you know, I didn't quite get to it, but I made it a point that I was going to record this thing. And actually, oddly enough, today is my father's birthday. quite a day to be doing this, I guess, but he's fresh on my mind. And we can talk about it as far as, you know, times where he's on my mind and times where he's not. It's no understatement when I say that this is the most toughest podcast that I've ever had to do to date. I could talk to anybody. I could interview anybody. But to come on here and tell my story, my side of the story about my father, that's difficult. But I'll tell you this. I am all about being as real as possible. For me, it's all or nothing now. You know, like this last year was like my awakening, not just in a weight loss, but in life. You know, like I put everything out there on like Instagram. You know, I put out the most embarrassing photos. And if I have a bad day of a workout, I tell everybody about it. I'm just as real as I can possibly be now. More than ever. And so when people ask me, what is the story with you and your father? I'm going to tell you about it. And being that it's been over 2 years since I've actually heard from him, whether it be voice, text, whatever, quite frankly, I don't, at this point, I'm so far gone from it that I don't care what his response is to this podcast. I doubt he'll even hear it. But for me, I'm just beyond the point of caring now. I'm just like, I'm going to share the story. I'm going to get through this story, basically, is what I'm going to do. I'm going to share this story with you, and I'll let you draw your own conclusion. Because, look, there's a very fair chance that you might listen to the thing and say, Gary, you're way off on this, or you know, that may be possible. But again, this is my side of the story. I'm not claiming it to be the absolute definitive truth without taking his side into account. I don't know his side. He won't talk to me. So I'm just going to give my side of the deal because you guys asked, and you can form your own conclusions on this. This is all my what I've seen, what I've actually encountered, what I've heard. And, you know, if he wants to tell his story one day, he can. Hell, if he wants to sit down with me in a room on a podcast, which, believe me, hell will absolutely freeze over before that happens. But if he ever wanted to do that, we could do that. That might be the craziest thing ever, but I don't think that would ever happen. I can't get him to talk to me in private, let alone on a public forum like this. So here's my side of the story, and you guys just draw your own conclusion. When I was younger, you know, I grew up with my mother and my father. He was not around a bunch. And the reason that he was not around a bunch is because he served in the United States Navy. And for years, I was so proud, so happy, honored that, you know, one of my family, many of my family have served, but my actual father served for this country in the Navy. And I think that's great. I really do. He would send me videos and letters from sea. And to get these letters and videos was great. I remember when I would get a video or a letter, how happy I would be. He would send me, you know, a hat from the ship he was on. He would send, you know, all these things when I was younger. And somewhere between then and as I got older, something changed. I don't know exactly what. You know, the 80s are very much a blur for me. I remember living in San Diego a couple of times, and I remember living here in Virginia probably primarily, I would guess, probably most of my years. My mother or somebody can clear that up, but actually she says I have a better memory than she does a lot of times. So, but I want to say most of the time obviously was spent here in Virginia and a couple of stints in California, maybe a year or two at a time. Somewhere something changed. And I don't know if that was when my mother met somebody new. I mean, obviously he had to stay in contact. He was paying child support and things like that. But I don't know. I don't know quite the deal. I did go and visit him twice, once in 1992 and once in 1993, both in the summertime. I want to say they were about a month at a time for each trip, roughly. That's to be debated. I think it was like a month at a time. And my mother recalls that, you know, she had to send money with me because, I mean, and I remember him buying stuff. Obviously, I was young. I didn't have a job at that time, but, you know, she was sending money for stuff that I would want. And he was basically, you know, footing the bill on, I guess, food and things like that. What I've learned, in my own reactions, not just what she would tell me, but in my own interactions with him, he was always very particular about his money. His money was his money. This is not some made up thing that I heard second or third person. This is first hand interaction anytime I've dealt with him, and I'll get to that later. But money was always a thing with him. And it was apparent here in the early 90s that was when I was starting to see it a little bit. And after 1993, it's kind of a blank space between 93 and 99. Crazy, huh? Six whole years. If I remember correctly, there are a couple times where we probably have talked on the phone, I'm sure, you know, maybe an hour at a time, just getting on the phone. My mother thought it was very important that I had my own phone line at an early age. I mean, I want to say probably 94, 95, I had my own phone line, primarily so that I could talk to him. And then later, obviously, was when I had girlfriends and, you know, my cousin Larry or whoever would call me. I had my own phone line. So that was very, very critical. I guess it was also something to where, you know, if he was calling the house, you know, he wasn't calling the main line and perhaps my stepdad Brian would answer. And that could be weird. I could see where that would be weird. He came out in 94. I'm just recalling this now. I do remember this. Okay. So this is the thing. Like, I've got bullet points on my notes here, but I'm probably going to remember stuff as we go along. And again, this is all my side. If I forget something, I forget it. If I remember, I remember it. I'm just trying to give you everything that I know, and then you can form your own opinion. But 94. Okay. This could be a pivotal moment right here, I think. 94, he comes out, he's visiting, and I'm spending some time with him. He comes and picks me up from my house, spending a weekend with him. I believe it was at my Uncle Mark's. Somewhere along the lines, and again, this is 94, I'm like 12 years old. I don't remember what was going through my head at the time, but somewhere in there, I got this idea that I wanted to live with him instead. And, you know, my mother and my stepdad were, you know, they had their own problems in the past. I don't hold this against them in any way, but at the time as a kid, you know, that could kind of sway your thought. You know, there was fighting and things like that. And, you know, nobody's perfect. I love them both to death. I mean, they're still together today. So that tells you the strength of their love. And I think when you love somebody, you're going to fight with them too. I mean, it's just not possible not to fight. Nobody's perfect. But I think somewhere in there, I got the idea in my head that I wanted to move out of there and live with my father. And somewhere along the line, we talked and he said, you really want to do it? Something to that effect. You really want to? I said, yeah, let's, you know, I want to do it. I want to live with you. When I was younger, I always kind of put my father on a pedestal, like, you know, and maybe it's because he wasn't around a lot and he was kind of like this mythical character in my mind. Like, you know, I put him up on this pedestal like he's so great. And damn, this is tough. I guess I always kind of just thought of him as, you know, this great person. And when I said that I, you know, was thinking about going out there, he said, all right, you know, we'll do it. We'll figure it out. Cause I, if I remember correctly, he drove out there that time, if I remember correctly. So I think that's actually accurate because we were talking about driving across the country back to California. And so I go home and I tell my mother that I want to leave. This day is incredibly difficult that I'm speaking of. I remember this day being just so incredibly difficult. And I think at the time my mother, you know, she was so upset that she was like, okay, you want to leave? Leave, fine. You know, she was just, I think I just shocked the hell out of her. And I wish I hadn't, you know. Sometimes when we're kids, you know, we make these crazy thoughts, you know, like, and we don't take into account the reaction that's going to come from it. And so I leave with him, I pack a bag, I leave with him, you know, my stepfather, my mother are very upset. Stepfather's like, you know, I hope you know what you're doing here, that kind of stuff. And I wish I knew what I was doing too. But long story short, I spent the night and he was going to take me to school and there were police waiting there. And, it was basically told to him and me that I'm not going anywhere, that I'm staying in Virginia with my mother. I remember us sharing a few words. I don't remember exactly what it was. I do know that we exchanged I love yous. We hugged each other and he left. And maybe this was a turning point. Maybe it was. You know, my mother and I had a talk about it later that day after school and we had a long talk and I think her and I got on the same page. And, you know, I just knew in my heart, I just missed my father so much that I just wanted to be with him. I wanted to spend time with him. But, you know, with his career in the Navy, living in Virginia was just not feasible at that time. It just was not, it was not possible. So, you know, my mother and I come to an understanding. We're cool at this point. We hug, we make up, you know, I don't think she's upset at me anymore. Obviously, I think we're good. But I always kind of wondered how my father took that. And I could imagine that he probably did not receive that very well. So a couple of years go by and we're still in contact. I do vaguely remember just a couple of phone calls here and there, but not a lot more than that. And somewhere in 98, my grandmother got sick. She had lung cancer. She's no longer with us. And the details are sketchy for me too, because as bad as he is with conversations and keeping in touch with people, I am the same way. And I've said this in probably a lot of podcasts to people that staying in touch with people is not my strong suit. I probably inherited that from him because he's not so great at it either. And I saw my grandmother many times in those years. She lived very close to me. But somewhere along the line, she got sick, and I don't remember the conversation or how I found out or what it was, but I knew that she had lung cancer. She was going into surgery to get it removed. They went in. They removed it. They were going to take her to plastic surgery to fix up her neck, you know, because... And again, my timeline's sketchy, so people that are listening that know me or whatever, that know the situation, they can correct me. But If I remember correctly, she had the surgery. She had staples in her neck. I remember visiting her that day. I remember that that was incredibly difficult because it was kind of like a shell shock. It was the first time seeing a close family member in a lot of pain with a serious medical issue. Seeing the staples in her neck was kind of like a visually jarring thing. I remember being almost sick. But I do remember at that time they thought they got it all out and that they were going to take her to a different hospital and they were going to do some plastic surgery and get the staples out so that way she looked normal and that she would have one of those things that they put on their neck or kind of sounds like a robot, but she would be able to live. And that was the best of my understanding of it. And then somewhere maybe like a month later, maybe 2 months later, I don't recall. It was determined that the cancer was in fact not all the way gone. In fact, it was continuing to spread and that time was running out for her. And I remember that I was asked to call my father because at the time he was not going to come out here. Which is just kind of crazy to me when you think about it, right? I mean, like, I know if that was my mother, any condition, and I'm right by her side, but something that serious, it's not even a thought. Like, I don't give a shit if I have to move mountains. I'll be there the next day. I'll be there in hours if I can, if it's possible. I don't know his situation. I can only speak to my side, my opinion. Again, I can't speak for him. I can just say that if it was me, I know what I would do. And that's exactly, I would be there. It wouldn't be a question. I wouldn't need my son to call me. And this is what he told me when I called him. He was very offended. He was very upset. I don't need my fucking son calling and telling me that I need to come see my mother. I know what I need to do. But he came after my phone call. Maybe he was going to, but after my phone call, he showed up. And that was in like March or April. And by May, she was passed. She had passed away. She was in like an assisted living hospice type situation. And she passed away. And that was tough. I loved my grandmother to death. I lived with her for a couple of years while my mother was kind of getting things together, setting up for our next chapter of my life in the house that she still lives in that I lived in for many years. I was living with her while everything was kind of coming together. I loved my grandmother to death. And when she passed, that was very tough for me. He was here. He came for the funeral. And then he went home. And less than a year later, his father, my grandfather, passed. I want to say his was cancer. I don't remember. I didn't have a great relationship with my grandfather on his side. I didn't see him a lot. Him and my grandmother got divorced, and it was a very touchy subject. I remember one time when I was younger going to visit him with my mother and my father while they were still together. And somehow my grandmother got it out of me that we were with Grandpa, and she was not thrilled. She was pissed, and thus my father was pissed because I let the cat out of the bag, even though I would argue, to the best of my recollection, she got it out of me more than I was willing to tell her. That's neither here nor there. I never had the closest relationship with my grandfather, Cantrell, but, you know, once in a while we talk on the phone. I was a lot like my uncle, Bobby, on that side as well. You know, we talk on the phone here and there and, you know, there would be conversations, but it didn't go a whole lot farther than that. A few visits here and there over the years. So he passes away and, you know, my dad comes out for that. Couple months later, I'm graduating. This is the year 2000 and he comes back out for that. I'll be honest with you. I didn't think that he was going to come out here because he was just out here and I know how he is with money and things like that. Like I get an idea of how he thinks and I was like, well, gee, he was just out here for his father, which I'm great. I'm glad he did come out. I'm glad he made the choice to be there. But I know that he's probably not going to come out for my graduation now. And he showed up. So he actually surprised me and he came out, and I was thrilled. I really was, to have him here, because I knew that within a couple of days after my graduation, we were going to be flying to California to visit, and I was going to go out there for 1 month. And, you know, anytime I went out there, he was still, you know, he was working hard. You know, he was doing his job, working. And then when he wasn't working, you know, we tried to spend time together, but a lot of it was he wanted to watch TV, and that's just what it was. He had his programs, he had his recordings. He was going to do his recordings at this time in 2000. I believe he was still married to his second wife, Diletta. And if anything, if there's one constant about all these trips, is that I probably spent maybe more time with whoever he was dating or married to than I did him. Because he was either working, which I understood the working part, but there was also times where he just wanted to watch his TV. And, you know, if I was talking, he would say something like, you know, can you just be quiet? I'm trying to watch this TV. And I'm like, you know, I'm still young. And I'm like, all right, Dad. Yeah. Yeah, man. Yeah. You know, cool. I just look back at it now and I'm just like, God damn. Like, you know, I flew all the way out here, and, you know, TV's going to be there, you know, like, dude, can't we just hang out? Can we do stuff? And for him, hanging out was him watching TV and me being quiet, or, hey boy, can you get me a beer? Like, I'm here to serve him beer. I don't know, man. I mean, that's just tough. But I dealt with it. I grinned and bared. I dealt with it because I was just so happy to be with my father. You know, I was just so happy to spend time with him. And I remember leaving him towards the middle, end of August, whatever it was, in 2000, saying, maybe we could do this next year. He's like, yeah, maybe we can. And it was tough to leave, but I left, and that was it. We really didn't talk a whole lot, you know, a couple of phone calls again. This is kind of the story of our relationship as I get older. And I don't know if he's hands off because deep down he remembers that time in 94 where he thought he was going to get me and he didn't get me. And maybe he's pissed and he resents that a little bit. I don't know. But finally, in a couple of years later, and I'm kind of skipping ahead because there's not really much here other than a few phone calls of, hey, how you doing? I mean, there's really not much else. And in 2004, you know, you're starting to get to the internet chat age. And I remember, you know, seeing him online, you know, and, you know, he would never message or whatever. So I just wrote him a long message and said, hey, like, the hell, man, I haven't heard from you. What's the deal? You can jump online and talk to internet chicks, but you can't, you know, you can't talk to your son. You know, who do you think you are? Blah, blah, blah. Why is this so one way? You know, it was basically that. I mean, that was basically the basis of it. You know, maybe an FU here and there. I was younger. I didn't care. I don't know, you know, like, I don't know what that is. But we didn't talk again for a couple of years. In 2005, I met Amanda, who would become my first wife. We were married 1 year later, and I do remember, you know, saying maybe we can mend the bridge, invite him to the wedding. It would be a goodwill gesture. And I believe that she actually called him. I think I still had his number. And she called him, and he told her, quote unquote, thank you for the invite. I really appreciate it, but I'm not interested. And that was it. And my father did not appear at my wedding, which, you know, a wedding, I kind of put that on the similar level as a graduation, like, okay, you know, hey, you know, that's a big life moment, right? I mean, that's kind of what that is. And so for him to turn that down, I was gutted. on one hand, I get it because of the very strong FU type nature of my first letter to him on that IM in 2004. So I kind of get it. Like, but at the same time, it's like, you know, maybe we can put our stuff aside. Which, by the way, that letter in 2004, he never responded to. This is kind of a recurring theme. You call Gary Sr. out on his shit and he doesn't reply. That's, you're going to learn that as we keep going on. You call him out and he doesn't reply. You ask him for anything else. You talk to him for anything else. You're likely to hear from him. But if you actually directly grow a pair and call him out, you don't hear a damn thing in return about it. So, first wedding goes by. It was about a year later, 2007, sometime in September, I want to say. I was living with my first wife, actually the same neighborhood I'm living in now, just crazy. And I remember one night I had a dream, and I actually fell asleep on the couch that night. I had a dream, and it was my grandmother, his mother, coming to me in a dream. And she said, you know, I love you, I miss you, all this stuff. And this just, people are going to, and I, it's tough because I know what some people will think. They're going to think, oh God, you know, Gary, you're out of your mind, you're crazy. But I had this dream about my grandmother, and she said to me, among other things, first of all, she was in her nightgown, which if you knew my grandmother, you'd go over to her house. She was always in her nightgown. She'd wake up. She was in her nightgown. She'd watch her Redskins in her nightgown, Mark Rippon blowing the game in her nightgown, throwing the remote. You know, this is my grandmother's life. She'd only got dolled up when she went out and played bingo or when she went somewhere else. But for the most part, she's in her house in her nightgown. So how fitting that she would come to me in a dream in her nightgown with her Diet Pepsi on my coffee table. And she comes to me. I love you. I miss you. I need you to make peace with your father. That's what she told me. She said, you know how stubborn he is. And this is just kind of tough to tell because, you know, she's coming to me in a dream, and I'm telling you guys right now, this was as real as I've ever felt anything. She said, I need you to make peace with your father. You know how stubborn he is, but I need you to be the bigger man, and I need you to make peace with him. And I told her, okay. And I gave her a big hug. And let me tell you guys that... I'm sorry, just give me a moment. This was like 8 years after she passed. And for her to come to me in a dream and tell me to make peace with my father and then to give me a hug, and I can feel it. I could feel her grip onto me. Like, I felt it. It was so real to me to feel this. And I told her, I said, I will. I'm going to do it. I'm going to reach out to him, and I'm going to make peace with him for you. And it was tough for me because, much like him, I'm stubborn as hell. That was just who I was. That's who he is. He's stubborn. But I said, I'll do it. It was the realest thing to me. I could feel her. I could smell her. It was probably one of the most realest moments I've ever had in my life. And it was in a dream, and I could feel every bit of it. The next day, I reach out to him and we have a 2-hour conversation. And I apologize to him there's no apologies from him. Not that he needed to apologize to me for me being a dick to him over an instant message, but maybe a, hey, sorry I haven't been around as much. But I just went through it. You know, I just said, you know what? That's fine. I'm just gonna keep my mouth shut, and I'm just happy to talk to him again. It was like, I felt like it was the old days, you know, just the way I felt about him. He's back on the pedestal, just think so highly of him. Can't wait to see him. And he says, you know what, why don't you and your wife come out and visit me? And so we make a plan to go out there in 2008. This was August of 2008. And we did a lot of things. You know, we went to Universal Studios. We went to Disneyland. He was with somebody new at this time, a nice woman named Brenda. And he was living in her house. And we just spent, you know, a solid week together. And we did a lot of things. And that trip in particular was fun. I don't remember him working a lot. Then I think I saw more of him in that trip than I ever saw. And he started to call me. And, you know, after that. And I was very surprised to hear from him. Unfortunately, there was a recurring theme with these phone calls. Hey, boy. My Wi-Fi router seems to be acting up. What do you think is the deal with this thing? It started to become, hey, I need technical support. My Wi-Fi is broken. My printer is not working. Something's wrong with my TV. And he knows I'm a tech guy. He himself likes a lot of tech stuff. We do bond on that, or we did bond. We don't talk now, but we did bond on that. And it was that one-way thing all over again. Just a one-way thing all over again. But I was just like, you know what? I'm talking to my dad. I got a relationship with my dad. It's a one-way relationship in many ways, but I'll take it. I'm just happy to have a relationship with him. And that was just kind of the deal, you know? So you fast forward a year or two of that, and I plan another trip to go out there to see him in 2010. If you guys notice, he's not once flown out here since 2000. So we're now 18 years, and he's not been back to Virginia. Unless he's been here and I don't know about it, he's not been here. So I go out there in 2010, and we're planning things to do. At this time, I have a job, so, you know, I'm on the hook for a lot of stuff. He's like, why don't we go to Vegas, you know? And I was like, I'd love to go to Vegas. I think that'd be an awesome idea. And we're trying to figure out, should we drive, should we fly? You know, we couldn't figure it out. I was actually out there during Thanksgiving, I remember. And I was like, man, I don't think I can remember a Thanksgiving with my father. It had probably been 15 years at that point since I've had a Thanksgiving. Maybe longer. Probably not since the 80s that I've had a Thanksgiving with my father. And so we're trying to figure out going to Vegas. And again, this is Gary Sr. we're talking about. So it's all about, well, we're going to split this right down the middle. Yep. You know, hotel, we'll split that down the middle. You know, we decided to drive, and I believe it was Brenda, to her credit, had a wonderful idea. Hey, why don't you guys take my car? You'll probably save a lot on gas going out there. My dad, nah, I want to take my truck. And, you know, this damn truck got just the worst gas mileage. So, of course, gas was more expensive. Like, it was just stuff where he didn't take into account that, hey, you know, I don't have this income that he has, you know. You know, and it's not to say, look, I'm not trying to say, hey, I'm coming out there, you know, spend all your money on me. Like, that's not the case. But, like, I know that if I hadn't seen my kid in 2 years, And I'm not a kid, I'm an adult. But if I hadn't seen my son, okay, let me rephrase it. If I had not seen my son or my daughter in 2 years, you know, I'm going to at least offer some things, right? Like maybe I'm secretly hoping that he's going to pay his way, but I'm going to at least say, no, let me get that. I haven't seen you, man. Let me treat you, my treat. And, you know, he bought me a few meals while I was out there, but a lot of it was me paying my own way. And, you know, we were out there for 2, maybe 3 days, and that was just his thing, you know. And I was going to get the gas on the way out there, and he said, nope, I got it. And he waited until I lost most of my money in Vegas and then said, oh, by the way, you got that gas money? You know, and it's just like, he's a piece of work. You know, for me, I was kind of like, you know, I would love to, you know, I'm always of the mindset of if I owe, you know, money or whatever, like if we're going to split it, like fine. I'd rather just get my share out of the way. And for him to say, nah, just get me later, knowing damn well it's my first time in Vegas, I'm probably going to spend more than I should. And then you're going to come to me, you know, when you've got all this money, because, I mean, he probably blew a couple grand in those few days. And that's no lie. He told me, you know, because I lost about $700. He's like, oh, you're bitching about losing $700. I lost a couple grand. You don't see me crying. You win, you lose, you know, all this kind of stuff. But knowing that I was low on money, it was still, hey, you got your end of it on the way home. And I'm like, yep, sure do. And this was what started me wanting to go home. Cause I remember that this was the longest trip I ever took. It was 10 days. Normally I'd go for 5 or 7. I went for 10, and by day 7 or 8, I was ready to go home. You know, it was my last few days in town in San Diego. And, I was like, hey, let's go out and do something. Well, that's my mistake, because it's a Sunday and he wants to stay home and watch football. Now, mind you, when he was working, when he had to work on Sundays, when I was not there, it was, well, it's on the DVR. I'll just watch it later. I'm there. Nah, we're going to stay here and watch it. And I was like, you know what? That's fine. Whatever. Brenda says, hey, let's go out. So her and I, we go out and we do stuff. So again, it's more that spending more time with whoever he's dating or married to than I'm spending with him, because he doesn't want to leave the house and he's just being stubborn. You know, he just wants to watch his football. He doesn't want to leave the house. And mind you, we really hadn't done a whole lot of leaving the house. I mean, a lot of the hanging out was in the house. I mean, we'd go out to eat, or, you know, Saturday at the swap meet. Every Saturday we had to go to the swap meet. You know, that was his thing. Like, we were doing stuff, but it was according to his plan. And again, if I hadn't seen my son or daughter in a while, I'm saying to hell with whatever I got planned. We'll figure something else out. But he thinks differently. And again, this is my side, my opinion. I'm not speaking for him, but this is just my interaction. And just to see the way that he acted, you know, like whether he's asking me or Brenda, you know, can y'all get me a beer? Because he couldn't get up off his ass and get his own damn beer. Or, you know, bring me my dinner. His dinner was served to him on a dinner tray. He had a bell that he would ring. Now, he did not ring it while I was there, but I was told that he rang a bell sometimes when he wanted attention or service. And I was just kind of over the way he was treating Brenda. I mean, they're not together anymore. It's none of my business what their deal was, but I can only speak on my observation, and they're not together anymore. So that should tell you all you need to know about whatever that was. Maybe she was part of the problem. I don't know. I've only met her twice. You know, I spent maybe a combined 2 weeks with her. I don't know her all that well. But, you know, some of the stuff she would tell me, which it's none of my business to share here, about the way he was acting, kind of makes you think. And based, you know, I can't speak to that because I wasn't there for what she's saying. But what I can say based off what she was telling me matches up with his personality. So I was more inclined to believe what she was telling me. And there was a time where, you know, after I left, I went, you know, some time without talking to him. But before I left, I did tell him about the dream I had about Grandma. And I didn't know how he was going to react. But I told him why I got in contact with him initially and why we reconnected. And I told him about the dream. And he just kind of looked at me like, you know, maybe I was a little crazy, you know, which I would imagine some of you guys listening probably think I'm crazy about that dream. But I'm telling you, that was real. That's real talk. So... Yeah, I mean, it was just this thing, you know. He looked at me and I told him, and he was kind of just like, you know, thanks for sharing, but he really didn't have much to add. You never get a whole lot out of him unless you're talking about something he's either really interested in or something he knows a lot about. Other than that, you're not getting a whole lot. And that's just real talk from my perspective. So again, I leave and, you know, I wait, you know, probably a month or two, and I call him again. This time I just got a new job, and it kind of struck with me. One of the things he told me on a phone call, he told me, oh yeah, you got a new job. Now you'd be making all the money. You can come out here and take me out for a couple of nights. And I'm just like, really? I think I rebutted him with, why don't you come out here and I'll treat you to something. He didn't have much of a reaction for that. Anytime you bring up coming out here, not much of a reaction. I didn't hear much from Gary after this. I wanted to wait and see how long it would take him to call me after this. Maybe a game, maybe not. I wanted to see. And sure enough, a few years go by and not a single thing. Other than at this point, he got on Facebook at some point in 2011, 2012. So he was popping in with a random like and a comment on something of mine, but that was about it. Yeah, that was about it. I mean, just a few interactions here and there on Facebook. I'm actually looking at it now. He sent me a message in July of 2011 talking about Hulkamania. He was, it was really weird. He knows how much I like wrestling. He hated wrestling. The last like real message I got from him was Christmas Eve. He just said, I love you. And that was great. I love that. I said, Merry Christmas to you too. Even though he didn't say Merry Christmas. I said, I love you too. You know, a couple of random messages here and there, but from 12 to 15, I heard nothing. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. He stopped reaching out to me on my birthday, and I just did not hear from him. And, you know, I'm just like, if I'm not going to hear from him on his birthday, you know, I was being stubborn. I'm like, why should I call him? I don't know. You know, it was just my mindset at the time. So he didn't call me. I didn't call him. We didn't IM. We didn't Facebook message. We didn't Facebook comment. Nothing. Zip. Zero. Zilch. Nada. So, in 2014, I got engaged to Heather, my current wife. And a few months later, I called him, giving him probably about 6 to 8 months of notice. And I said, hey, how you doing? He said, I'm doing great. How are you doing? I said, I'm doing great. I got some great news to share with you. And this is really key, because when I saw him in 08 with my former wife, Amanda, my ex-wife, I told him, you know, I wish we could have got together on my wedding. I would love to have had a drink with my old man. And he said, you know, that would have been cool. I wish we could have done that. And I said, well, hopefully I'm never getting married again, but if I ever do, we'll get that chance. And he said, yep. And so fast forward to 2015, and I call him, and I said, hey, man, we're finally going to get that chance. And he said, what do you mean? I said, well, you know, as you know, I got, you know, divorced, and a couple years went by, and I got engaged again. I'm getting married. Oh, cool. When are you getting married? I'm getting married in September. You going to be there? Silence. Oh, well, you know, I'll think about it. I'll see what I can do. Times are tough right now. I'm going to try to see what I can do, try to see if I can make it out there. And I said, okay. Good talking to you. Have a good day now. And that was it. We didn't talk for the rest of the summer. Now, I was getting married in September. He calls me on August 25th, 2015. This was 2 days before my birthday. Not a happy birthday, happy early birthday. He just calls to say, hey, I'm just calling to let you know that I don't think I'm going to be able to make it to your wedding. You know, I'm really sorry. Times are just so tough right now. Money's tight. I just don't think I'm going to be able to make it. And my response, because I was just gutted, because I was like, here's a second chance. Like, I fucked up in my life enough to where I got a second chance at marriage. And, you know, to get my father to come to my wedding. I was like, wow, I really screwed up that bad that now I have a second chance for him to come out and be a part of my second wedding. And he turns me down again. I'm just gutted. And I remember hanging up the phone. I said, all right, good luck to you, Gary. And I hung up the phone. And that was it. I didn't say F you. I didn't say anything. I just said, good luck to you, Gary. And I hung up the phone and I got married a month later. And it was tough. You know, I had my stepdad, Brian. I had my father-in-law, John, which these two guys, by the way, I don't know where I'd be without them, especially my stepdad, Brian. He's had my back since day freaking one. He's been there for me all the times my father wasn't. I consider Brian more my father than I consider my father. That's real talk. And I'm sorry, Gary, if you're listening, like I know you're probably not listening, but if you're listening and you're offended, I'm sorry. That's just the way I feel. It's honestly the way I feel. So about a month after my wedding, I decide to reach out to him, but this time in Facebook, because I knew that if I called him with a strongly worded kind of thing, he's probably going to hang up on me, or it's going to be a F-U-F-U. It was either going to go one of two ways. He's either going to hang up on me, or it was going to be F-U-F-U. We would never get a word out. I would never be able to say what I wanted to say. So I decided to write out this very longly worded letter. And I'm going to read that to you right now. Right from my Facebook Messenger. I'm going to read this to you. This is October 19th, 2015, 2:42 p.m. Well, it's been a little over 3 weeks since I got married, and I put a lot of thought into whether or not I felt that I should write to you, and I've decided that in favor of writing you a letter. I remember when you used to write me letters when I was a child, when you were at sea. Those letters meant a lot to me. I wish I could say that this letter is filled with love and catching up, much like those were, but that isn't how this one's going to go. Whether or not you care, I've been carrying around a huge hole in my heart in your absence. I've tried to put Band-Aids on it over the years, trying to extend the olive branch, as they say, and reaching out to you wherever whether that be calls that I've made or the flights I've gotten on to come see you and pretend that it didn't hurt when you'd only call when you needed technical help on your computer, or pretend that it didn't hurt that you couldn't be troubled to get on a plane and fly to this side of the country. Yeah, it's been kind of this thing for the last several years, me wondering just what it would take to actually get you on a plane to Virginia. Well, this past year when I called you and informed you that I was going to be married, I thought for sure if there was anything a father won't miss, it's his son or daughter getting married, especially considering our problems the first time I got married. There was a second chance for me to pick the right bride this time, and a second chance for a father to be at a son's wedding. Fast forward to your phone call on the 25th of August, just 2 days before my birthday, and you inform me that you will not be at my wedding. I can't say that I was surprised. I mean, your I'll think about it answer to the invite earlier in the year pretty much told me all I needed to know. So here is something that you should know. I'm done. I'm not going to keep my feelings quiet and call you and pretend that everything is okay, because that gets me nowhere with you. Apparently the whole phone works both ways logic doesn't apply to you, because you didn't call me once between the years 2011 and 2015. I'm also not getting on any more planes to California. I may never even visit the state of California anymore in my lifetime, because it hurts so much when I think about you. If you can't handle this, sorry, put yourself in my shoes and just try to think about how I feel. Everyone tells me, oh, don't worry about him. He clearly doesn't care. While I'm inclined to believe that based on your track record, it doesn't mean I think about you any less. The pain is real every day of my life, and you can think I'm delusional or something is wrong with me to help yourself sleep at night if that works for you. You can think that mom put all this bad stuff in my head about you. You can give me all that I'm your father and you shouldn't talk to me like this crap. How about you actually man up as my father, and I'll give you that respect. You can put all the blame on me, but it won't change who you are and how you operate. To your credit, if there's anything you're consistent on, it's your selfishness. I don't need people to tell me that. I can see it for myself. I don't know exactly what it is that's keeping you away from Virginia, and perhaps I'm one more reason not to come back after this letter, but I'm tired of losing sleep over wondering why my own father, for once in his life, won't put somebody else in front of his own priorities, and don't give me any BS excuses about money, because I know how much you like going to concerts and gambling, and I'm not naive enough to believe that you couldn't fork over $300 to $400 for a plane ticket, if not less, given the amount of notice I gave you for my wedding. You made the choice not to come, and that speaks volumes. You can sit there and get mad and upset about what I'm saying, but it really doesn't matter. I don't even expect to hear back from you. Boy, I was quite the visionary on that one. In fact, go ahead and do what you did the last time we had a falling out. Do nothing. I can promise you, though, this time I won't be making the first call to break the ice. I can promise you I'm not getting on another plane to San Diego. If you want to fix this, then you need to come and talk to me. Get on a plane, let's meet up and talk about this. This may be the one invitation that you don't want to decline, because I'm not going to go back and forth with you over the phone or on the internet. I'm done with all that. If you leave this as is, you're never going to hear from me again. Think about that and let it set in for a moment. Then you decide if you're going to go on as business as usual, or if you're going to make the effort, get on a plane and come and talk to me. The ball is in your court, quote unquote, Dad. A little harsh, I'll admit. I mean, this is the first time I've read this, and it's probably since I wrote it or since I wrote another letter. Yeah, that was a little tough, but I felt that it was what needed to be said. And I wouldn't read it to you, the public, if I didn't stand behind every damn word I just said. Okay. It needed to be said. So, fast forward, it's January 20th, 2016, exactly 2 years ago today, and I see on Facebook that my father is in Las Vegas. Now, I would later find out that he's moved to Las Vegas, but I don't know that he was living there at this particular time yet. I think he was still in San Diego, as far as I knew. I could be wrong. Correct me if I'm wrong, please. But, I remember seeing that he was in Vegas, and I know how he gambles. And so this whole money is tight thing really doesn't hold any water when you think about what plane flights cost, especially when you have notice. I guarantee you he spent 3 or 4 times worth that already in one gambling night or going to a concert, because he goes to a lot of concerts. Okay. And that's real talk. He goes to concerts. He gambles a lot. Great. He's a grown-up. He can make his own decisions. But what I'm trying to say here from my point of view is he is outright making the decision not to come, and he's putting gambling money, throwing money away, literally throwing money into a fire, a proverbial fire, over coming to his son's wedding. That's my perspective on it. That's how I see it. And when I saw that post, and no disrespect to my aunt, because she was the one who was out there visiting him. And I think she's great. Everything she's dealt with, you know, whether it be my grandparents, my Uncle Bobby, you know, she's been through a lot. And, you know, she has the means to go and visit my father. She wants to fly out there and see him. I think that's great. Brother and sister, I'm glad they have that connection. You know, I think that's wonderful. Absolutely nothing against her. I'm not mad at her for posting a photo of the two of them in Vegas on his birthday. I'm mad at him because he's made the choice time and time again to gamble away money and not put away a couple of $100 to jump on a damn airplane to come to his son's wedding. That's what I'm upset about. It has nothing to do with her. Absolutely nothing. And so I was upset enough that I wrote him a second message, even though I said he was never going to hear from me again if he didn't reply. I was so upset. Now, I was so upset to the point that day where I was ready to call my boss and tell her that I was not going to make it into work that day because I was going to jump on an airplane, fly to Las Vegas, and confront him face to face. That's how upset I was when I saw that. That's how much anger and rage I had inside of me, that I was ready to jump on an airplane, pay an ungodly amount of money that I did not have, but I was going to find a way to get it, get on an airplane, and find him in Las Vegas, wherever he was, and look him straight in his face and tell him, why are you doing this to me? Why are you being like this? I had every intention in my mind, you know, because I actually work near Dulles Airport. I had every intention in my mind to drive to the airport and find a flight to Las Vegas and get on a plane and confront him. That's how much rage I had. That's how upset I was. I'm not upset now. I'm a little fired up just thinking about how I felt back then. So I waited 2 months on the 18th of March, and I wrote him another message. It goes like this. And this one was a little more angry. And so I definitely understand why he did not write me back to this one. But at the time, I wrote such a strongly worded message because I was like, you know, it was kind of that thing I used to do in podcasting where I used to try to be a shock jock. And I'm like, if I poke hard enough, I'm going to get a response. And that was the mindset. Like, I'm not justifying what I did. I'm just trying to say this was the mindset. If you poke enough, you're going to get attention. I didn't get that attention, but here it goes, nothing. So this is March the 18th, 2016. 5 months and nothing. Well, at least you met my expectations for a change. Funny to read me mention your gambling in the previous message I sent and then find out you were in Vegas just a few months after the wedding. Needless to say, I was pissed when I found out. I never ask you for anything. Never once have you gotten a call from me asking you for money or anything like that. I only asked for a father to attend his son's wedding. I asked you to put me first for once. You couldn't give me the one thing I wanted more than anything in the world. You took that away from me. Not even just once, but twice. Do you realize how pathetic that makes you look? You are the biggest coward I know. And the worst part is, you just don't care. Like, it's not fixable because you don't care enough to fix it. I am beyond disappointed with you, and I'm sick of trying to figure you out. Don't you realize that we only get one shot at life, and when it's over, it's over. Are you really okay with finishing your life out there, having never come back home to visit your family? If you can go to Vegas, you could have come here. You still can. Stop being such a dick. Why can't Aunt Kathy rub off on you some? I see her traveling to see her kids. She's traveled to see you. Here's a thought. Even if you don't come to see me, do something for somebody else. Come out here and visit her. I bet she would really appreciate that. Maybe you two can go visit your parents. Make a day out of it. You'd be surprised at how good it feels to do others for a change. It doesn't always have to be about you. I'm learning that and shaking off the bad habit that I inherited from you. I'm finally starting to put others ahead of me for once in a while, and it feels great. Believe it or not, you can actually take care of yourself and do good stuff for other people once in a while. Good luck to you. And that's how it ended. And that's true. Like, for all the times that she's flown out to visit him and he's not come out here once. Now, if he has, it would be the greatest kept secret ever. Because I didn't know anything about it. And knowing my aunt, I'm sure she would have posted something online if he was here. Okay, so he's not come out here once, and again, he has not replied to this message either. Thankfully, to Facebook Messenger, you can see when somebody's read your message, and when I posted the second message, I noticed that he read it immediately, and the funny thing about all this, well, I don't know if it's funny, but he then blocked me. He blocked me. The truth, from my perspective, was too strong for him, and he blocked me because he couldn't take it. Rather than even saying, hey, fuck you, I'm doing me, he just straight up read it, did not reply, and blocked me. Oh, that pissed me off. I was like, okay, all right, cool. I get it now. I get it. And so there you have it. And then there was one time, I think it was in August. No, was it September of 16? I got drunk and I drunk dialed him. And that was definitely stupid. I'm not even going to even try to defend it or justify that. I drunk dialed him because I got a little what they call liquid courage. And I said, you know what? Screw him. I'm going to call him. Let's see if he actually answers. He did not answer. He sent me to voicemail. And I left him a little voicemail saying, hey, you're a coward. You're a yellow belly. You're a gutless piece of shit. You know, things like that. But that was me talking drunk. It was stupid. Those things I shouldn't have said. The stuff that I wrote in the Facebook messages were wrote on a sober, clear frame of mind. And I stand behind those messages. This, I don't encourage or stand behind or co-sign to that. I don't like that I did it, but I did it and I cannot change that. Later in 2017, last year, I did fly out to Las Vegas. I would find out later that he moved to Las Vegas, and I was nervous going to Las Vegas because, you know, what I wanted, the idea of going to Vegas, my wife had never been to Vegas. In fact, our first date was The Hangover movie, and it took place in Vegas, and we saw it many times. The Hangover holds a special place in our hearts. So I said, hey, let's go to Vegas. Let's stay at Caesar's Palace. And I never once thought about my father other than I wonder what would happen if we ran into each other, because he lives here now. And I don't even know that he knows that I was there. I have no idea. Like, for all I know, he either has no idea of any of this or he actively follows maybe like my public Facebook page, or I don't think he's figured out Instagram. I doubt that, but maybe he saw I was in Las Vegas, because there was a brief time where I looked at Messenger and I was unblocked. And I don't know if he was considering writing me a message, and he didn't. Spoiler alert, he did not. So the actual last time I've spoken to my father was 2 days before my birthday, 2015. What is the conclusion of all this? We've gone an hour now. You have my side of the story. I've been dying to hear Gary Sr.'s side of the story for a long time. I would love to hear his reaction to my letters, how he feels about what I've said. But the truth of the matter is, I don't think he's ever going to respond. And since that last drunk dial, the last time I've ever addressed him in any way, shape, or form up until today, I haven't really thought about him. Like, in life, I have moved past. I talk a lot about, like, 2017, how it was my, like, awakening life and my weight loss journey, and I've come a long way. In many ways, I've gotten over all this. I'm kind of just over it. I'm moved past it. I'm recording the podcast because people asked me what the story was, and I'm about keeping it real. So I wanted to lay it out so everybody could, you know, hear it and understand what's going on. But to date, I've not heard from Gary Sr. I don't know how he's doing. I don't know what his health is looking like. I don't know how he's doing. But new me, the way I am now, I'm just kind of like, you know what? Good luck to you, Gary. Like, I'm certainly not going to waste any more energy on you. because I've just gotten burned way too many times doing that. And so I don't want to do that. But I'm just going to wish you luck. I hope that living in Las Vegas is everything you hoped it would be as you're now retired, I understand. I hope everything is going the way you hoped it would go. You know, I don't know how you feel about not having any family there with you. I mean, I know you've got, you can rely on your sister who will come out and fly out to see you once a year or once every other year or whatever. But your mother's gone. Your father's gone. Your brother's gone. And you've got your sister here. You've got me here in Virginia, and you have absolutely zero interest, even before I've said anything, in coming out to Virginia. Absolutely zero interest. And again, the one part in my letter about telling him, hey, don't come out here for me. Come out for my aunt. Come out for your sister. Like, I mean that. I mean that shit. Like, come out and visit her. Like, you know what? In a perfect world, come out and see her and just never tell me about it. Like, I would be okay with that. Come out here, visit with her, show her that you give a shit. Spend a week with her here. You don't have to tell me. I don't ever have to know. Y'all can hide me from Facebook. I don't need to know that you are here, but man, come out here for a Christmas or a Thanksgiving. How about some of that family stuff, you know? But I think family is lost on you a little bit. Maybe it's the fact that your mother, your father, your brother are all passed away, and maybe you feel you don't have a reason to be here. That you just want to, you know, you've put in your time in life and you just want to wither away in Las Vegas and blow every last bit of money, you know, until you die. But I hope you got everything out of life you wanted. And I wish you all the best. I know that the times where I'd go and visit grandma and grandpa's grave, especially grandma, talking to her a couple times in the last few years before the wedding stuff, and begging her. and I get it, you know, when people come to you in dreams and stuff like that, you don't get a choice, like it just happens. But I begged her, please go have this conversation with him. Because maybe in some weird way in my mind, I thought if he could have a similar dream after hearing my experience that I told him about my dream, maybe that would wake him up. But either he hasn't had the dream and it's business as usual and he's just going to keep doing him, or he's had the dream and he's just not changing. And I don't know that he's had the dream. So I'm going to end on this note. I'm going to say this. This was the hardest podcast I ever had to do. I'll let you guys draw your own conclusion. You know what? You guys may never listen to another podcast of mine again, because you may say, God, Gary, you're absolutely out of your mind. You're crazy. I can't believe you shared this. I can't believe this and that and the other thing. And wow, you're really delusional. Or you're going to say, man, you've been through a lot of stuff. Maybe a lot of you could say, yep, I've been there. I know exactly what you're talking about. I feel you, Gary. So either way, I want to hear from you guys. What do you guys think? What's your opinion? I'll leave it up to you. But as far as to you, Gary Senior, and I'll address you only right here, right now, as I close up this podcast, because look, there's a chance you may hear this. There's a chance you may not. I don't know if you will. I don't know if you won't. I don't care. I'm doing this because this is literally my final kind of communication with you, now that I've had a year to reflect on changing how I approach things in life and all the patience that I have now and all that stuff. I'm just going to say, you know what, Gary? I wish you all the luck in the world. I wish that you're living the life that you want to live in Las Vegas, being on your own, doing your own thing, whatever that is, gambling all your money away, whatever. In your life, you need to do it. I wish you nothing but the best. And, you know, you're my father. my biological father. I don't know if you're my father. I mean, I consider my stepdad, Brian, more my father now, more than ever, just for how he's been there for me. And I love him for that. But to you, my biological father, I'll always love you. Some part I'll always love you, but you've just got your own twisted way, in my opinion, of showing your love for others. And I wish you well. And today is actually your birthday. So I'm going to wish you a happy birthday. Something you haven't heard from me in a long time. Happy birthday, Gary. I hope everything's going well for you, buddy. And I wish you nothing but the best in life. And that's really all I want to say. And to the listeners, thank you guys so much for listening. This was a tough one to do. But it needed to be said, it needed to be done. And whether it's, you know, the thing in 94 or the drunk dial or whatever it is that's keeping him from coming back out here and communicating with me, I don't know which one of those things, a combination, something else. But he's not talking to me. He will not talk to me. I am blocked. He will not call me. He will not write to me. So the ball, literally, like if he in his mind wanted something to become of this, the ball's in his court. Ultimately, he's got to make that call. He's got to do something about it. I'm done doing something about it. I've given so much patience and so much of my time. I really felt like I did my grandmother right, and I gave her the courtesy of really trying to make that peace. But ultimately, what I figured out was that in that time, he just wasn't going to change. Not for me, likely not for anybody. And so the ball is really in his court, and he's got to make that call. So that's it. That's all I wanted to say about it. That's all I'm going to say about it. Until he reaches out to me, and whether we talk in private or we talk on a podcast, probably not going to happen, but I'm throwing it out there that I would be open to doing that. Until we communicate, my opinion doesn't change. I wish him well. I think he's got a fucked up way of showing people how he loves them, but I wish him well. Happy birthday, Dad, and all that good stuff. And I'll talk to you guys later.